Devasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. So, Tasya Karagrat Satu Kanduko Yada Yato Viduram Tam Anuprajat Sriya Vasa Sasutram Lagu Maruto Harat Pavasya Devasya Kiranupashyataha Tasya Karagra Satu Kanduko Yada. Tasya Karagra Satu Kanduko Yada. Tasya karagrat satu kanduko yadam. Gato viduram tananu vrajat sriya. Gato viduram tamanu vrajat sriya. Gato viduram tamanu vrajat sriya. Vasa sasutram lagu maruto harat. Vasa sasutram lagu maruto harat. Vasa sasutram lagu maruto harat. Bhavasya devasya kilanu pasyataha. Pavasya devasya kali Pavasya devasya kali Pavasya devasya kali nu pasyataha Pavasya devasya kilanu pasyataha Tasya karagrat satu kanduko yada Gato viduram tamanu vrajat sriya. Vasatsa sutram lagu maruto harat. Vavasya devasya kalinu pasyataha. Tasya karagrat satu kanduko yada. Gato viduram tamanu vrajat sriya. Vasasa sutram lagu maruto harat. Pavasya devasya kalinu pasyata. and the ladies. Tasya karagra sat gund ko yada. Tasya, of the beautiful woman, Kara Agrajat, from the hand, Sa, that, Tu, but, Kandukaha, the ball, Yada, when, Gata, had gone, Viduram, far off, Tam, that ball, Anuvrajat began to follow Striya of that woman, Vasa, the covering dress, Sasutram, with the belt, Lagu, because of being very fine, Maruta, the breeze, Aharat, blew away, Havasya, why Lord Shiva, Devasya, the chief demigod, Kila, indeed, Anupashyataha, was always looking. Translation, when the ball leaped from her hand and fell at a distance, the woman began to follow it. But as Lord Shiva observed these activities, a breeze suddenly blew away the fine dress and belt that covered her. No purport. So I go a little further. Lord Shiva saw the woman, every part of whose body was beautifully formed, and the beautiful woman also looked at him. Therefore, thinking that she was attracted to him, Lord Shiva became very much attracted to her. Purport. Lord Shiva was observing every part of the woman's body, and she was also glancing at him with restless eyes. Thus Shiva thought that she was also attracted to him, and now he wanted to touch her. Omagyanti mirandasya gananjana shlaka chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sva Padantikam. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sherveta Grata Shiva Sri Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. So this is a process that people have been following since time immemorial, at least in the material world, that by meditating the objects of the senses, gradually attachment develops. You see, even according to Western religiosity, it doesn't matter whether it's Muslim, Christian, or Jewish. The Abrahamic religions, they're called Abrahama, because they're all based on Abraham. And they share considerable amount of material and scripture. And so in all of these scriptures, there is the idea of Adam and Eve. These are not historical people. This is, of course, an allegorical situations, allegorical description of our situation in the material world. Adam and Eve is you and me, basically speaking. That the meditation is there, the snake approached, in this case, Eve, and she said, now if you eat from this fruit, you become as good as God. And so she thought about it, and gradually she became attached to this thought and ate. And from there, she became agitated, and then he saw it, and he became agitated, and they fell. Atma Tattva is an old devotee, I don't know anybody knows him. He told me that actually this story is from Vavishya Purana, that after the sages, in, I don't know whether it's true or not, Atma Tattva is Atma Tattva, but he said the sages in Namisharanya, after Maharaj Parikshit was bitten by the snake, they approached the snake bird, and he said, in this age of Kali, anybody will fall. And they said, well, we are sitting here performing a sacrifice. We don't believe. He said, well, let me take two of yours, and I show you. And she took two of them under the wings and brought them to another land. And there was a very pious pair of sadhus living. The man's name was Dharma. I forgot the woman's name. And he said, now, wait, what's happened? And there was a tree there in which that was cursed. And this tree, the sinful reactions of one Vedic king, I forgot the name, were manifest. They were transferred on this tree. And they were full of lust, greed, etc. That's why they were not suitable food. They were polluted. And so the snake said, watch. And she went up to this lady and said, if you take from this fruit, then you will become as good as God. And the rest is history. We know that. And Dharma fell, and his name became Adharma, which is then in the biblical tradition becomes Adam, for Adharma. His name was Dharma before, but by this interaction, he became Adharma. So he said, it's all coming from Vedic literature, originally. We know the sin flood is there, so many things come there, out of Vedic literature. We have the flood as well in our history. And so then gradually, but the idea is there that there's an attachment there, there's an, a meditation is there, in the same way the soul fell from the spiritual world. In the beginning it is very subtle, it's maybe just a thought. Prabhupada used to say it's just a thought. That maybe I was standing somewhere talking with somebody, because the fact is we all come from the spiritual world at one stage. Krishna says this, never was a time that you did not exist, nor I, nor though all these kings, nor will there be a time that we will cease to be. We are eternal souls. And so maybe I was thinking, just how would it be if I would be in the material world? How would that be? And within seconds, thinking and fact in the spiritual world is non-different. We come here. And Srila Prabhupada said one time that even after many, many births, in many forms, maybe universes, when we finally get it and realize that our whole life is based on, has been based on a false foundation, namely on the foundation of the body, and that we are not the body, that we are actually outside the body. Soul, spirit soul is always transcendental, even if the consciousness is affected by Maya. The soul is transcendental. So even if after millions of lives we get it and we actually go back to the spiritual world, then we find ourselves in exactly the same situation standing on the same bridge maybe, or where, or talking to somebody and just meditating. And this thought carried us to so many thoughts. And we are back. And Prabhupada said, the time that passed is just a split second of our leaving the spiritual world. And it turned into a huge roller coaster through so many lives and so many lifetimes drama that we are experiencing. Everybody has his own lifetime drama that he's going through, a story that is rattling in his head, beginning with sex and money and drugs and whatever, wife, children, home, America, Germany, whatever, race, religion, all these stories are rattling in our head, but they have nothing to do with reality. There's some sort of reality, but it is ultimately like a big dream in which we are dreaming our material existence, whereas actually the soul is outside the material nature. The soul, Saraputta used to explain that the soul is like a person who sits on a computer and becomes absorbed in the virtual reality of a computer game. And he makes friends there and meets others, complete strangers in the night, lovers on first sight, and they connect with each other, they mate, they have children, etc. And it goes life after life, living in a material, in a virtual reality, while actually the soul is outside the computer. But so much the identification is there that we are in complete forgetfulness of us sitting outside of our computer. So we are spirits. We are transcendental. We always have been. What we do have right now, a very strong material experience. That is our situation. We are having right now a very strong material experience. And in this material experience, we, depending on the planet, on the circumstances, on culture, identify ourselves with a false identity as a Christian, as a Hindu, Muslim, black, blind, woman, man, German, American, Hindu, whatever. It's just a dream. There's some reality to it. It's not that it is not real, but it is not everything. It is reality is very huge. Like, for example, the reality also is the universal form. We cannot see it. The scientists cannot see the universal form. They can only see everything within three dimensions, because that's the software that has been loaded down into our head that makes us to be able to perceive only within three dimensions. But the reality is described, for example, in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is actually what's there. It is what it is, but we can't comprehend it, we can't see it. If we explain to a scientist, well, there's a huge disk and it has rings, every one of these rings is filled with different kinds of liquid, in the middle there is a whirl, and from there there's a stem, and on top of that Lord Brahma is sitting, etc., and the whole thing is carried by four elephants who again rest on a gigantic turtle. He will suggest to you that you see a doctor. But that's what it is. But we can't see it. We can't see the universal form. Arjuna asks Krishna, can you show me? And then Krishna says, yes, I can empower you. Krishna can empower, does empower us at every moment. Just like, for example, we cannot see without Krishna. The eye is just an organ. But the seeing power itself, the Shakti, just like when you have a camera, the camera itself cannot see, but it needs electricity. Then the lens can see if it's empowered. So in the same way, our eye itself is not useful to see anything, but if it is empowered by the super soul, via the agency of Surya. Surya is a demigod who is in charge for seeing and perception. And therefore we can see something. And Krishna can extend that perception. Like he said, I can give you divine eyes. And then all of a sudden, Arjuna can see. I mean, how can we see? We are within the universal form. This is one planet within the universal form. Just, and we are in this. How can we see outside? Imagine there's a little bug in my intestines, and he has a wife, he has children. He has a little crevice there in the intestines that he feels he's very comfortable, better than the neighbors whose crevice is not that big. And he lives there with his wife, and how is he going to understand that he is living within the huge universal form of Prithudas? It's sort of this universal, he's situated there. Like a universal, how is he going to understand that? He's inside. Can't. He cannot perceive. Whatever he perceives is only within his vision. So in the same way, scientists will never be able to understand Krishna. It's a wrong approach. We can understand Krishna only by undivided devotional service. As Krishna says, there has to be some piety. Impious people like Stephen Hawking, he can look forever. He'll never see the face of God. Because there is no piety there. It requires a great amount of piety to see. Then Krishna can empower. The same eyes are able to see. All of a sudden, Krishna. So we are living in a very limited reality, the parameters of which are set by the super soul, what we can perceive. Reality is a huge spectrum. It's not just three-dimensional, it's multidimensional. Modern scientists, German scientists, found out, due to their calculations a couple of years ago, they had certain informations coming from their machinery, and they realized, their conclusion was actually that we are living in the whole universe is nothing but a hologram. That we are living in a hologram which is mirrored from somewhere else. There's a field behind it that mirrors this, like and projects this hologram. And we are living in a hologram. Well, it's better than just to think it's a three-dimensional reality. And the field we know, that ultimately the being behind the field, there's a being behind it, that's Krishna. And in Europe they constructed this gigantic hadron particle accelerator, which is 23 kilometers in diameter, which is huge. All of Los Angeles fits in there, practically speaking. And they're trying to find the God particle. Well, we know already the God particle. Take a Bhagavad Gita, there it is. You just put $1.25, you can get a Bhagavad Gita. And there, whatever they may come, whatever they're searching for in this Hadron accelerator is explained in Bhagavad Gita. I'm the source of everything, Krishna says. Aham Savasya Prabhu. That's the source of everything, including the universe. It's a cheaper way. It costs something like $23 trillion to construct this machine. But they're not. They're so rascals. They're rascals. Namam duskritinu mudha prapadyati, like Krishna says. They're not willing to accept Krishna. They have no piety, neither to accept nor to see, and so they're trapped. They're searching and searching and searching, and they will never find Krishna, because Krishna, even Mother Yashoda could not tackle Krishna. What to speak of a mundane, impious scientist? So the position is that we are coming from the spiritual world, and we have forgotten where we come from. We have forgotten who we are, really. In fact, everybody is suffering in the material world. We are in an identity crisis. Like a young person, you know, he stands in front of a mirror and asks himself, "Should I wear the best baseball cap? Maybe this way, or that way or that way, or maybe my hair should be like, how do you call it, cockatoo? This bird, cockatoo? Mohican. He may have a bone in his nose because he has an identity crisis. And a couple of years later, you meet the same person in a bank with a tie on the counter as a teller who 20 years or 15 years ago had a bone through his nose. So he got over, as an example, over his identity crisis, mini-identity crisis that a young person is experiencing when he's growing up. But the whole, we are still children. Our whole life is an identity crisis. That we are basing our life on a false foundation, and thereby fashions are coming, and people want always something new, something different, because they're in an identity crisis. And wear the hair like this, or wear this clothes, that clothes, buy this or buy that. It's all due to this fact that we don't know where we are coming. We have forgotten who we are. It's not that the spiritual body doesn't exist. It's just we have forgotten our spiritual body. We have forgotten where we're coming from. We have forgotten who we are. And we don't know where we are going to. People have no idea where we are going to. Even we don't know whether are we actually going to the spiritual world in our next life, or are we going to the heavenly planet, or are we going to be born in a devotee family in Kalva City? God knows. Or a cockroach in the Hare Krishna temple. God knows what Krishna has in stock for us next. We don't know where we are going to. So, and people don't know especially what to do with their lives. Neither do they know where they come from, neither do they know where they're going to, neither do they know who they are. Not do the people know what to do with their lives. That's the situation of people. And so we ended up here in the material world. The story of Adam and Eve is actually really good. It shows us how, due to some material object, something material, we became attached to this idea, and now welcome to the madhouse. We are here in the asylum. Material world is an asylum, and there people pretend to be this and that for a whole life. Scholars, scientists, professors, Germans, Americans, etc. But all this dream is collapses at the time of death. And it will be decided where we go next based on our activities. So Maya is so strong. This illusion is so strong that you know yourself, and I know for myself. You can see. You sit down and say, now, Preacher Das, I will get your beat back. It's early in the morning. Sit down and chant. And you start chanting. And then after some time, the mind is going bonkers. And you think, well, there's this one thing, you know, we have to do. And there's this other thing. And remember that one. And different things come into the mind. Shall I or shall I not switch the computer on? Facebook. Or something. So Maya is there in many, many ways to distract us. In many, many ways. And we become distracted in so many realities instead of staying focused. And for most people, their life is based on a false foundation. There's this verse in Bhagavatam, Brashyat Janusmitis Chitam Jnana Brahmasmiti Kshaye Tadrodam Kavaya Prahur Adma Panavam Admana. When one deviates from his original consciousness as a soul, he loses his capacity to remember his previous position or to recognize his present one. When remembrance is lost, all knowledge acquired is based on a false foundation. When this occurs, scholars consider the soul to be lost. And that's the situation. The soul is lost in the material. Soul is not lost ultimately, but we are lost. Can't kill the soul. But it is a soul-killing civilization that degrades the consciousness of the soul to such an extent that people are able to do the unspeakable things and feel justified. And feel completely justified. Just like I met one Nazi some time ago. And he explained to me that actually Hitler should be given the Nobel Peace Prize. I said, how do you get that? He said, well, it will take humanity hundreds of years to understand what he was doing. He said, what he was doing. He said, you have to understand that the activity. I said, as far as I'm concerned, I told him my father was in a concentration camp. And he saw what he was doing. He saw what happened to the Jewish people. He said to me, Mr. Brinkman, you cannot let the Jews run around free. I mean, this is just 5 years ago. He must have been 90 years old, the man. You know, he said, you cannot let the Jews run around free. I was shocked. And he explained to me. I said, so what is, why should he have a Nobel Prize? He said, because it's like a forester. He goes into the forest and he kills all the weak animals so that the strong animals can survive. So his act seems to be merciless, but actually that's mercy. That is his mercy. And he's serving the race of the deer to make them strong and powerful and happy and healthy, etc. So he said this Christian idea of mercy for everybody, it is foolishness. It is foolish. That's not mercy. Mercy means to elevate mankind. And that's what he was doing, therefore the Nobel Prize. So that's the first time that I really understood what they're talking about. You know, what's behind there. That's why people don't feel bad when they get caught. You know, because everybody has his logic, his justification. And so did they have their justification? They were thinking they're doing welfare work by eradicating a whole race. Because the mind is unlimitedly mutable. It can be changed in so many things, and so many things make sense to people that doesn't make sense at all from the point of transcendental knowledge. And so that's what happens, that people are basing their life on a false foundation, and they work their whole life for that. And then in this way, like I mentioned this verse the other day, the house becomes a prison. The mind and the intelligence becomes a thief in the senses. Let me see if I can find this verse. Great verse. Here it is. Tavat ragadaya stenas. Tavat ragkara griham griham. Tavan mohon gri nigado yavat Krishna. Natejanaha, and the verse is that, my dear Lord Krishna, until people become your devotees, their attachments and desires remain thieves, their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. That's in the false ego conception of life. Whereas on the other side, if somebody is actually Krishna conscious, then like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said, my house, my home, my body, manasadeo, yoki trumor, whatever I have, yoki trumor. Arpilon tua pade, I offer to your feet, Nanda Kishore, O son of Nanda Kishore. And so Prabhupada said that the residents of Vrindavan, the boat of Lord Krishna, are simple householders engaged in similar or so-called ordinary activities like parenting, cooking, rearing children, performing religious activities, herding cows, etc. However, all these activities are intensely engaged in the loving service of Krishna. The residents of Vrindavan performed all activities in pure Krishna consciousness, and thus they existed on the most exalted platform of liberated lives. Their life was not based on a false foundation. The life was based on the foundation of the soul, which is the foundation we are actually standing on anyway. That's reality. But then Prabhupada says, otherwise the same activities performed without Krishna consciousness constitute ordinary bondage to the material world. So that's what we have to get our head around, that whatever we do in the material world, it has to be connected with Krishna. Yat kadoshi yat ashnashi, whatever you do. I mean, if you think about it, like killing people on the battlefield is not an inherent spiritual activity. But if it is connected with Krishna, like Arjuna did, then it becomes spiritual, it becomes transcendental. So in the same way, any activity, if the goal of it is Krishna, the satisfaction of Krishna becomes transformed, it becomes transcendental. It doesn't matter whether it's housekeeping or whether it's child rearing or whether it's studying in the university or whatever it may be. The same activity is carried out in a different consciousness. The consciousness is the important part. The attitude with which this activity is performed. And that attitude is called Krishna conscious, the Krishna conscious way of doing these things, the Krishna conscious way of studying. In this way, even while being in the material world, the body becomes a source of liberation. The wives, the children, the home, the rest, the material world, matter itself becomes a source of liberation. Like a kitchen knife is not inherently good or bad. If you cut the throat of a goose, well, then it's bad. If you peel a potato with it, it's very good. The same knife. The same in the body, the family, the environment, the Los Angeles of Watsika Avenue. What do we do with the Watsika Avenue? If it's just a big riha, then, we are missing the point. But if you use the same facility, some or other, to connect with Krishna, use our life, our mind, our intelligence, our time, whatever, then that is actually the activity of the soul. Like when Prabhupada was preaching to Professor Durkheim in Germany, he said, how do you get people to this platform? Prabhupada said, they're already there. He said, what do you mean with that? He said, well, look at the here, listen, what do you hear? And Durkheim said, well, I'm hearing there's some music in the temple. They're singing, Hare Krishna. Prabhupada said, that's already there, that's transcendental. The activity is already transcendental. Although we don't get it, because we are absorbed, our mind is directed towards the body. But all these activities like hearing and chanting and serving and cooking, and if it is connected with Krishna, it is transcendental. And all these activities, particularly we do in the temple, are completely transcendental. I mean, if I were to go to the spiritual world, and I would ask the question to somebody, can I offend Krishna? They say, yes, you can. Can I offer incense? Can I offer food, flour? People said, this is wonderful. Where did you learn it? I said, well, in ISKCON. Because these things are transcendental rituals. They are eternal rituals. These are not, they're not mundane rituals. This is what happens in the spiritual world. We're doing it right here. If I were to go to the spiritual world and say, I want to drink the blood of the Lord and eat his flesh, they say, hold on a minute. You have to, there's one planet in a particular universe where there's a particular religious congregation where they do this. At least they're thinking they're doing it, that they're eating the flesh of the Lord. You got to go there. This is here. Nobody has any idea of this. It's not an eternal ritual. These are man-made ideas. And so most religion is man-made. They're just concepts. It's an ocean of concepts. Really, the world of religiosity is what, in due course of time, people have concocted. There's a nice verse in this regard. Let me just find it. Give me a second. There it is. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Vrasyatyanusmiti sitam jnana brahmasmiti kshaye tadrodam kavaya prahur atma panavam atmanaha. This is actually not the right verse. Excuse me. There it is. Sri Chaitanya Prabhum Vande Valo Piyat Anugrahat Tare Nana Matagraha Vyaptam Siddhanta Sagaram. Offer my obeisance to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by whose mercy even an ignorant child can swim across the ocean of conclusive truths, which is full of crocodiles of the various theories. So the world of religion is full of these theories. This theory, that theory. If you go to the spiritual world and ask Lalita, fictitiously, ask Lalita, Srimati Lalita, what is the Trinity? What is the Holy Trinity? What will she say? Or maybe these are three spices for a particular preparation for Krishna. She'll have no idea that that's the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, because there's no such a thing like a Holy Trinity in the spiritual world. It's just a concept. And so the whole world is full of religious concepts. That's why people are fighting. Somebody just made it up. It was precisely made up in the Council of Nicaea in the year 325 AD, or 45 AD. This concept was made up. And the world has been believing it since. But it's just a concept. Krishna is much more than a trinity. Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is not just in heaven, like people believe. These are the concepts. On one side, people think God is in heaven, nowhere else. And then others believe that Krishna is everywhere in terms of his effulgence, and I can merge into this effulgence. Both concepts are not correct. And Krishna is everywhere. He's not just in Vaikuntha. He's in every atom. Andantarasa paramanu chayantarastam. And he has unlimited forms. Advaitam achyutam anaryam anantarupam. He has unlimited forms. That's the truth. And this universe is just one unit. This petty planet. If there would only be one Son of God, well, what about the rest? How is the rest of the universe being redeemed with millions of planets, if there's only one sun to spend, according to Christian theology? And what about the other universes? Now God would be very petty, small God, that he's just concerned with this ridiculous tiny speck in the universe, the earth. So these are the fantasies of terrestrials. Terrestrials, people who are sitting in this world. Terrestrial-centered people. That has nothing to do with the reality whatsoever. The reality is there are so many planets, there are 14 planetary systems in this universe, and on the highest there is Lord Indra, the king of heaven, and then there is Mount Kailash, where Lord Shiva is residing, sitting in a tree, which is under a tree, which is 800 miles. But if you go to, you can go to Kailash. Kailash is the Kailash mountain is in Tibet. Sachinanand Swami went there. What do you see? Nothing. It's just a bare mountain. If you read the description of Mount Kailash, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are beautiful rivers, there are beautiful forests, there are waterfalls, there are beautiful women, there are elephants, there are deer. If you go to Kailash, you see nothing, as much as the scientists when they went to the moon, they saw nothing. Because within our three dimensions, that's all we get when we go to Kailash. We see nothing. We go to the moon, we don't see anything, because we are limited to three dimensions. Reality is more than that. So, while being in this tiny, puny, tiny Sweden, people concoct all kinds of ideas. Whereas it is clearly stated that religion is coming from God. Dharman hi sakshat pranitam. Krishna is creating religion. And everything else, Mandhin dharma, mana dharma, mundane religion. Yes, Krishna says it. What he says is what it is. He said it should be given up. Sarva dharma, because it doesn't help us. The concept of Trinity doesn't help us to go back to the spiritual world. It's a mundane concept. Or the idea that we should drink the blood of Jesus. That's a mundane concept. These are just concepts, ideas. And Lord Chaitanya says, Krishna's Kaviraj said that the world is an ocean of ideas, of theories about God. This theory, that theory. And we have to go beyond that and come to the essence. And the essence is religion, true religion. And what does that mean, really, religion? Religion, there are two words that make up the word religion. One is re, means again. In Latin, re, again. And the other part is ligare, means to connect, to reconnect with God. That is religion. And God as he is, not my own idea of God with a long beard or whatever my concept is. With his name. Krishna has a name. He has. People make up so many names. According to the Red Indians, to the Sioux tribe, the name of God is Wanky Tunky. Well, it's also the name of God, I suppose. But in the spiritual world, nobody ever has heard of Wanky Tunky, for sure. Nobody ever has heard such a thing. It's just a mundane idea of the great spirit, Wanky Tunky. So we have to come to the essence, and the essence is the soul, and the right foundation to stand on. There's only one foundation, that's where we actually are situated as spiritual beings. That we are very old. We always have been. And now we are here in Maya and we identify, and my name is Prithudas and your name is this and that. We identify in this particular environment, this particular body, this particular relationship. But it's all phantasmagoria in the ultimate issue. It's just temporary. Like on a cinema screen. We are practically speaking on cinema all the time. It's just made out of many pixels. But actually there's no substance to it, to material existence. There's no substance to it. It's just a big dream in which everybody is living. And Krishna consciousness means life beyond that dream, living in reality, being situated in our own constitutional position as souls, number one, and B, as servants of Krishna, number two. In this way, we can explain Krishna consciousness in 5 seconds. Prabhupada explained to Professor Durkheim this sentence. He repeated it over and over again, 5 times. That, you look here, somebody has a watch. Stop it. Stop my... I'm now explaining Krishna consciousness according to Srila Prabhupada. Look at the book. Tell me when I start. Well, I'm not this body. I'm a spirit soul. I'm a part of God. My duty is to serve God. Finished. How long did it take? 12 seconds? 4 seconds. So in 4 seconds you can explain Krishna consciousness. That's all. I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul, I'm part of God, my duty is to serve God. That's it. Now to realize that, that's another story. But that's the basic philosophy right there, within 4 seconds. And people don't know. People don't know they're not the body, that they're spirit soul. And even the biggest religionists, they have no idea. That once you understand that you are a soul, you understand every other person is a soul. Even a dog is a soul. But people don't know. The Pope John Paul was asked on St. Peter's Square, do animals have soul? And he said they don't have. That, as soon as somebody says have, he doesn't understand. We don't have a soul. We are the soul. So he says they don't have a soul. But they have an immaterial, non-spiritual soul. Where does he get that from? He's just made it up. If somebody asks a big man a question, so he has to have an answer. But it is has nothing to do with reality. There's no, if it's not material, then it's spiritual. If it's immaterial, then it's spiritual. So they don't have a material soul, but an immaterial, but non-spiritual soul. This is concoction. And the whole world, religious world, is full of such concoctions. And we have to put our life on the foundation we are supposed to act on, the platform of the soul, and use all the material ingredients that are given to us, the circumstances in Krishna's service. Try to Krishnize our environment. Then we are footing our life on the right foundation. It has nothing to do with mundane religiosity. It has nothing to do with opinions. It has nothing to do with ideas. It's not something that we made up. It's not that something we have thought. Although people do this, they make it up. One time when Brahmachari asked Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, I'm so bewildered, but sometimes I'm thinking." And Prabhupada said, "Don't do that. Don't do that. It's wrong thinking. Right thinking is to understand that knowledge is descending. Avaroha Panta. It is, reality is descending via parampara. And to accept that and to try to understand that, that is knowledge. And the rest is just ignorance. Different kinds of ignorance that people are flouting. It has nothing to do with reality." So I will stop right here. I thank you so much for your attention. Somebody may have a question. Please be free to do so. Are we over time? What's... 8:37. Is that class too long? No? Over time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
That was an amazing class.